JM and AM, Friday morning, Erev Shabbos. Jake Novak is with us. In addition to being the executive director of Beitar USA, he's also one of the best political commentators out there and can break down all the interesting things that have happened over the last couple of weeks since the last time we spoke to him, frankly. Jake Novak, a pleasure to welcome you back to JM and the AM.
Thank you so much for having me.
So let me see if I get this straight. You'll tell me if I'm right or wrong. I know we have to go back a couple of weeks. I think it was 3 weeks ago last night. Just to focus on that for a moment, then we'll obviously talk about the Kamala Harris recent endorsements, et cetera, et cetera. So essentially, we go through a period of months where we're guaranteed by the Democrats, its leadership, and the media that Joe Biden is the most fit person to be president of the United States. Then the debate happens, and all of a sudden, I assume they have to completely redevelop their strategy and say, okay, this guy, there's no way in the world he's winning this election. We're going to use his performance at the debate to start this new narrative that he's got to be replaced. Is that essentially what went down 3 weeks ago?
Yes, but with some caveats. So it was actually now 4 weeks. I know it's amazing. I couldn't believe how quick it was last week when I realized it was only 3 weeks. But in 4 weeks, we've had almost every day lifetime type rarity political events happening. Now, the last time I spoke with you, I talked about how if Joe Biden is breathing, he's going to be running.
Right.
And so what happened is that literally he stopped breathing figuratively. He basically figuratively stopped breathing right at that debate. Now, the thing about this being as if this were a surprise to the Democrats, where I've also said, however, that there is clearly a group within the White House and a group within the Democratic Party who doesn't like Joe Biden. And by the way, I think Israel has a lot to do with it. I think that there's a group within the Democratic Party who, believe it or not, didn't think that Joe Biden was anti-Israel enough during this entire ordeal.
Wow.
And wanted to get someone who would be even tougher and even more unfair. And I think that that cabal may have been responsible for getting these early debates scheduled. I was very, very suspicious of how they were scheduling a debate before the conventions. That's never happened before.
Right.
That was very weird. And I think maybe they thought, well, he'll either falter at this thing and then we'll have our excuse to get him out, or he'll do better and then we'll march along. And I think that that was probably what happened. And he did poorly. But the funny thing about it, Nachum, is this wasn't even in the top 10 of bad performances in public speaking for Joe Biden since his presidency. It was bad, but he's had much worse. You know, so it did feel a little bit like a setup. It really did. Not by the Republicans, not by the Trump campaign, but it did feel like a setup among the group within the Democratic Party that probably, you know, that is much more regressive and radical.
Interesting. And of course, they have to wait till they can get the media on their side as well, because it would have been very hard if the media would have used the debate night opportunity to defend Biden. It would have been hard to move in that direction. Of course, anybody who was watching, even the left-wing media, saw that they just couldn't defend him. They came out and said, you know, he's got to ride off into the sunset. Jake Novak is with us. So, what do you think of his parting words? I know they're not parting words. He's in office for the next few months. I get it. But did it matter at this point? Like, some people are upset. They didn't address the fact that he wasn't well and that his health, in fact, you know, was part of this whole decision. Never even addressed that. Like, did it matter how he, you know, left the White House with his statements? I know he hasn't left yet, but you get my point.
Yeah, well, I'll say Lahavdil a million times in a second, but, you know, this time of year, I'm always thinking ahead to the parsha where Moshe kind of gives his farewell to the people.
Right.
This was far from that. You know, the biggest problem with his address was that it really didn't answer any questions.
Right.
He sort of hinted that, okay, I'm getting out of the race because I don't think I can win, but he never mentioned anything about his physical or mental state.
Right.
It could have been a great opportunity. He could have said something along the lines of, this is something that happens to people my age. My doctors have told me, you know, he could have fudged this. He could
right.
have said, you know, my doctors have told me that this isn't the best move, and this is a great time in America for all of us to take a look at our older family members and loved ones and see how they're doing. And I mean, it would have been a great opportunity. I mean, this would have been, it's funny, right. this, the, after his speech, you had a bunch of people in the political punditry canonizing him and saying how great it was. And he actually didn't deserve that. Had he done something like this where he put a focus on aging, then he would have deserved it. So that was one problem. We really didn't get a real explanation as to why he dropped out. And we didn't get a real explanation as to why we should really support Kamala Harris. He didn't have much to say about her, really. We just heard that she's younger. Well, so is someone who's, you know, a couple of years younger. What's the point? So to me, this was a huge missed opportunity in an entire presidency that was almost every president and politician and sometimes even school principals, in my opinion, miss opportunities. I'm always shocked at how often people miss opportunities to really make a name for themselves. And it doesn't take even that much of a risk. And he, you know, his whole presidency has been a missed opportunity. Could have been a great opportunity to bring people together. There's a lot of things you can do. And this was just the latest example of
that. Jake Novak is with us. All right. So now let's get to today. And then we'll go back when we discuss the whole Trump angle. Obviously, we'll go back to the attempted assassination. But in terms of today, she now has the endorsement of the Obamas. I'm assuming that now it's a slam dunk. It's game, set, match. She's going to be the candidate on the Democratic side. Don't know who she's going to choose as vice president. Let's start with what concerns many of our listeners. What do we need to be concerned about? And you sort of alluded to it now when you mentioned that Biden may not have been anti-Israel enough. What do we need to worry about regarding Kamala Harris and Israel?
Well, the first thing I've noticed is that, now maybe this will change today now that she has the Obama's endorsement, but as soon as Biden dropped down and nominated Kamala, she had the nomination wrapped up. This wasn't going to be a challenge for her. Right. And yet she was still campaigning to the very, very far left as if she were still in a primary. And one of the huge, huge missed opportunities was not showing up for Netanyahu's speech on Wednesday. This was a huge missed opportunity for her. This is someone who doesn't have any real foreign policy experience. It would have been a great photo opportunity for her to be in the building there, sitting behind him. Every picture of Netanyahu would have included her for the most part. And this was something that Biden wasn't going to and Trump wasn't going to. This was her stage, and she blew it. So this campaign staff already is showing us they're not too sharp. And they've already missed huge opportunities. She's showing up on RuPaul's drag show, you know, which is something you would do if you were running in the beginning of a primary. Now, let's see if that changes today. Let's see now that the Obamas are endorsed here. Let's see if she starts running and talking more like she's running in a general election, running towards the middle of America. As far as what we should be concerned about with her policies, well, yes. I mean, my first concern is that perhaps she is the result of an anti-Israel faction within the White House and perhaps even the State Department. If that's the case, we have to be worried that she'll be marching to their drum because she owes them. But the biggest concern, and this was true of Joe Biden too, by the way, but it's certainly true of Kamala Harris, is I don't think this person believes in anything. Right. One day she'll say one thing, one day she'll say another. Now, we don't want crazy ideologues who never change their mind about something. I mean, we'd love people to evolve. But I look at somebody like Kamala Harris and you look at her career and there's no reason to believe she believes in anything other than herself. You know, I have to say when people talk about different things in politics, I always say there's no such thing as a non-religious person. And politics for a lot of people is a religion, but also so is narcissism. That's probably the number one replacement for religion, just believing in yourself, worshiping yourself. And if that's all you care about, then you don't have any real beliefs. I don't see this person as someone who has a belief system, which means that we have to work every day. If she ends up being president, we must work every single day to win the argument, because she's not going to listen to anything other than what she thinks is where the wind is blowing that day.
Jake Novak is with us. All right, back to Trump for a moment, and we don't have to sit and analyze the attempted assassination and the fact that he actually got shot. There's plenty of information about that and plenty of research to be done out there. But what's interesting to me is, and I'm sure you had the same experience as probably thousands of people listening had, Shabbos ends and everyone's phone starts blowing up. And as my phone is blowing up, people are saying to me, oh, my gosh, you know, aside from the fact that we're concerned about, you know, the ex-president, the former president, he just won the election. Now, I don't know, first of all, and I, of course, said, you know, there's still 4 months to go, and by next week, this could be a completely different atmosphere, but many people felt that was a slam dunk for him in that case. Now, if Biden was still in, tell me if you agree that Trump probably would be on his way to victory. Now with Harris in, something that nobody, you know, considered that Saturday night, that she definitively would be the nominee, is this going to be a tremendous uphill battle for Trump?
Well, I'm gonna preface this by saying there will be no landslide. I don't know if we'll ever get another landslide in an American election. So let me just preface that by saying that. But I've actually felt that ever since the debate, there's been no path to victory for the Democrats. And by the way, that's another reason why Kamala is the nominee, because she's someone they are really willing to sacrifice. And again, by sacrifice, I mean just lose. It's not going to lose by a lot. It's going to be a late election night. I pray that we don't have 3 days waiting for a result, because
she'll have the excuse that America's not ready to elect a woman, the whole thing.
There's a lot of things like that.
Right.
The assassination attempt absolutely, you know, in a sick way, obviously did help the Trump fortunes. And you're right to say that the fact that Biden dropped out not long after that, 8 days later, tamped down some of that momentum just because it took it out of the news. However, the hearings went on, and it still made the top of the news, even in some of the regime news media channels. So it's not out of the news. It didn't get out. It just got pushed, you know, got equal billing.
Right.
But I just don't see a path to victory, because what's going on here, in addition to the assassination, and much more importantly, Nathan, we are in the middle of the greatest political scandal in American history. This cover-up of, which, of course, a poor cover-up, something that most of us saw right through for 5 years, this cover-up of Joe Biden's lack of cognitive ability, this cover-up of the fact that he's basically a scarecrow used by the party just to kind of sit in the chair, is the worst political scandal of all time for a number of reasons. One, and this is still ongoing, and Kamala Harris is very much at the center of it.
But before you continue with this analysis, appropriate to say, but it can't one conclude that the majority of people in Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and those couple of other states, you know, really don't care about it? I mean, that they'll be indifferent because of their hatred for Trump and the fact that they want her to be president?
Indifferent, I wouldn't say. I think that they absolutely are. I think people are pretty upset about it. There were people out there who were told Joe's the greatest. Putting his bumper sticker on is something that I think people are embarrassed by now. And they also, I think, now see that this is really just an operation against Trump. And hatred can do a lot for you in an election. You're right. These people who just hate Trump. But you would have to be blind and deaf not to notice that the raw hatred for Trump throughout the country among the people who weren't has dissipated. And it dissipated a little bit more after the assassination attempt, but even before the assassination attempt. I'm not saying they're loving him. I'm not saying they're really embracing him. But the real strong, strong hatred for him, which is required to pull off the kind of shenanigans the Democrats pulled off in 2020,
right,
to get people to go out in the middle of the street in some of these neighborhoods and do ballot harvesting, you need true believers. And you don't have that with an administration that gives you a new candidate all of a sudden, lied to you for a long time. I don't see the foot soldiers out in force this time. I see them out protesting and defacing and vandalizing and doing anti-Semitic stuff. But right, that's not for the Biden campaign. That's kind of their foot soldiers doing something else.
Can I ask you to predict the past for a moment? it was, and it's going to be funny saying this, because what could be worse than someone shooting at you? But could the assassination attempt have been the worst thing to happen to Trump? And I mean it politically, obviously. I'm not talking about physically. Meaning, without that assassination attempt and without the media and the Democratic elites getting the feeling that he has so much momentum now, they may not have insisted that Biden leave.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. Like I said, I think since the debate, there's been no path to victory for the Democrats. You know, they might even still win the popular vote with all the shenanigans and with all the and California and the big heavy states they have. But no, I don't think whether that sped up the process to get rid of Joe Biden. I mean, remember, before the assassination, he was on his last strings. I mean, he was holding on by a feather anyway. So no, I don't think so. I think that that is only true if you believe the premise I kind of shot down earlier. If you believe there's going to be some kind of slam dunk in this election either way, and there's just not going to be. The country is so terribly divided. The country is, and there's an infrastructure to deliver states that, you know, won't flip ever. So I just don't think so. I think it's not the case. No.
With her in it, is Trump so much more challenged now for the women vote that it looked like he was making progress with, and the younger vote, which it looked like he was making progress with, you know, against Biden? It seems to me that she's going to be a much more of a formidable candidate than we thought.
Well, I think her entrance in the race solidifies what was a chance for Trump to grab, but is now he's not going to grab it. So he's not going to grab a larger section of the women's vote than
However, minority vote, by the way, also.
Yeah, right. I mean, these things are not necessarily going to happen. Again, it's going to be a close election. But, you know, of course, she turns off people from women voters and a lot of black voters as well. And a lot of younger voters got really turned off by her in 2019 when they found out about how she flip-flopped about her marijuana policy. So she's not going to be she's not going to bring back 2008 or 2012 levels of black voters or women voters to the Democratic Party. Right. But she will solidify, she will stop Trump from making, and the Republicans from making big gains on those levels. And again, it's not going to be, it's probably going to be very difficult for Trump to win the popular vote. But to me, I still see him trending towards 300 electoral college votes at this point, which, you know, in this day and age is a clear victory, but right. Again, no landslide. And she's definitely become anti-landslide insurance.
Finally, Jake Novak, should Prime Minister Netanyahu have discussed the potential for a ceasefire/hostage deal from the lectern of the United States House of Representatives?
Yeah, I think so. I think that there has to be a point where you make people understand. It's kind of like saying, I'm going to consider the two-state solution. We all know that Israel is not the problem in a two-state solution. But, you know, your friends have their shiny toys. And their shiny toy is the two-state solution. A new shiny toy is a ceasefire. You don't want to tell them that this is a ridiculous toy that you're playing with that makes no sense.
Or that you're ignoring it.
So you acknowledge it, right. and you consider it. But the thing is that, of course, this is not really a real conversation. It's not Israel that's in the way of a ceasefire. It's not Israel that's been in the way of the two-state solution since 1933, since before even Israel. I mean, that's how long they've been offering this option. So you just basically say, we know this is what you want. We're not the problem. And that's really all you should say. And that's pretty much what he said, I think. I mean, yeah, obviously, we're working towards it. I don't think that was the wrong thing to do because, again, these people have to run for re-election. And in the speech, he gave them two tremendous gifts to take back to their constituencies. One saying that evidence that Israel is doing the best ever in the case of protecting civilians, and two, that Iran is funding these protesters and that they're useful idiots for Iran, which got the biggest applause, by the way, because right. That's what they want to take back to their constituents, and he gave them that.
Very good point. Jake, how do people reach you on Twitter, etc.?
I'm at JakeJakeNY on Twitter X. I'm also on Substack, JakeNovak.substack.com. And one update, Nachum, and this is not your fault. I'm the executive spokesperson for Beitar. We're still working on finding that slot, but certainly helping with Beitar, which, of course, is a great organization, is the reason why the members of my family who did survive the Holocaust. It needs to be reinstated in this country, the idea that Jews come from a position of strength. Read up on Jabotinsky, read up on Beitar. I urge everyone to do that.
I don't know if I'd want to be on that search committee because I don't know if there are any qualified people to take that position right now, frankly, but I'm sure you're working hard to find them.
Yes, it's hard. It's hard, but an important job.
Thank you, Jake, and Shabbat Shalom to you.
Shabbat Shalom, everybody.
Jake Novak, he's amazing and so clear in his analysis. We love having him on. More coming up. It's JM in the AM.